Welcome to ScotsCast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.
On March the 1st, a Wednesday just over 5 weeks ago, round about 6:40 p.m, Reuben Kay, comedian, cracked a joke on national television that divided the nation. Well, a little bit anyway. It was on The Project on Channel 10, and it was a joke about Jesus. It was a joke, more specifically, about the crucifixion of Jesus. Now, it turns out that in spite of Australia's growing disinterest in the Christian faith, that in spite the increasing unpopularity of anything Christian, it seems that jokes that mix sexual innuendo with the crucifixion of Jesus are still apparently a bridge just a little bit too far. Waleed Ali, notably Muslim, was notably not amused. The joke fell flat or was met with uncomfortable laughter from the rest of the panel. The next night, Waleed apologised to the nation, especially to all the Muslims and Christians who'd been offended. But that, of course, didn't stop the angry protests outside Channel 10 that kept on for the next few weeks, chanting and placards. Of course, chanting and placards seem to be everywhere these days, although that's just Melbourne, I guess. The anger, though, was very real. And maybe even now, if you hear about it, you can feel your hackles rising a little bit, and you're thinking someone should do something. Well, here's what you should do. And I'm turning back now to our Good Friday readings, brought to us, by the way, by my favourite reader, though I am a little bit biased. Thank you, Louise. Here is what Christians should do. Forgive. In fact, it's often observed, and you might have said it yourself, that members of other religions don't get mocked like Christians do. I mean, imagine the outcry. I think that is for the simple reason that by and large we actually do take note at this point of the words and example of Jesus himself on the cross. And if Reuben Kay thought he was adding anything to the humiliation already heaped on Jesus as he died, Reuben Kay's only kidding himself. Just glance again at our passage. If you're a regular here at Scots Church, we've been following through the story in Luke's Gospel the last few weeks. And already as part of his trial, Jesus has been spat on and whipped. Already they've mocked him with a crown of thorns. They've bowed down in mock worship at the thought that Jesus claimed to be some kind of king, dressed him in a purple robe, and even now, nailed and hanging in agony on a cross, I don't think they've done enough. They are still at him. Verse 35, the rulers scoffing at him. It says, and the people stood by watching, but the rulers scoffed at him, saying, he saved others, let him save himself, if he is the Christ of God, his chosen one. It's interesting, Matthew in his gospel recalls an extra sentence. He trusts in God, let God deliver him now, if he desires him. For he said, I am the Son of God. Let God save this king, if he's as special as he says. And Jesus stays silent. Verse 36, the soldiers add their voices to the rulers. The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine and saying, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. And Jesus, not a word. Luke says the sign above him is mocking him as well, that announced him as the pathetic and beaten king of the Jews. In Roman governor Pilate's mind, probably with a double edge aimed at the Jewish leadership as well, a reminder of who's really in charge, but very much pouring scorn on any claim of Jesus. And then even a voice beside him chimes in. One of those two criminals nailed up beside him. We've had scoffing, we've had mocking. Now we've got in our English translation at least one of the criminals railing at him, though in the Greek original, it's literally the word blasphemeo, which means exactly what it sounds like. Blasphemes him. Swears at him. If you're so smart, Mr. Christ man, then save yourself and get us out of this mess as well. If Reuben Kay thought his joke on Channel 10 was somehow clever, he's got nothing on these guys. It's nothing that hasn't already been said. Back in 1997, Martin Short starred in a B-grade comedy movie called A Simple Wish. He was a bumbling fairy godmother, Murray, up against Kathleen Turner as the wicked Claudia. And the one memorable line to come out of the movie was this one from Kathleen Turner in her most indignant voice. "How dare you mock me?" Which for some reason got picked up by our kids and became a bit of a family meme, sometimes in anger, other times just to see who could get the most ahs into dare. "How dare you mock me?" See, absolute indignation from Claudia, the Queen of Evil, that bumbling fairy godmother Murray had made her look foolish in public. Which is our natural inclination too, isn't it? Indignation when we're mocked. But not Jesus, who in his embrace of our humanity is going all the way down. Early in the 3rd century, a bunch of semi-literate Roman soldiers were apparently mocking one of their cohort, Alexamenos, who had decided to become a Christian. They scratched some graffiti on a plaster wall in a room near the Palatine Hill in Rome to mock him. It was rediscovered in 1857. It's a picture of Alexamenos worshipping a human figure on a cross with the head of a donkey. And the words underneath say, "Alexamenos worships his God." Mocking. You might as well worship a donkey, mate. Bowing down to a loser like Jesus. Though apparently in the very next room, sometime later, they found another inscription in smaller print that says, "Alexamenos Fidelis." Alexamenos is faithful. Curious though, isn't it? What is it that gives any sense of value to this central man on this central cross in this small group of three on a hill called the Skull, surrounded by voices that relentlessly mock him and deride him and blaspheme him? Let me take you back to what I think is the pivot point in our passage as the soldiers are carrying out the act of crucifixion, driving the spikes through his hands and his feet. It is, I think, in narrative terms, as you just stand back and look at the story, it's oddly understated, the blood, the searing agony, it's just not mentioned. But here's the reason Jesus is going to stay silent in the midst of the mocking. This is picking up back in verse 33. When they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him, and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." as they literally nail him up, Jesus is asking his Father God to forgive the ones who are doing it. It's not outrage. It's not indignation. Not how dare you do this to me. You know, the Late Show host James Corden was indignant when he wasn't given the best seat in a restaurant in Manhattan. Don't you know who I am? Jesus, being nailed up, says, Father, forgive them. As he prepares to suffer in his innocence for what we later see is somehow an exchange, an absorbing of the cosmic consequences of the wrongdoing of the guilty. So that forgiveness and not indignation can be right at the very centre. It is, in fact, right at the heart of the Christian faith and the Christian paradigm. It's becoming a lost art in our culture, isn't it? Where we are triggered and outraged at the slightest offence, where you're cancelled at the slightest slip with almost no hope of redemption. Robert Woodyard, an American pastor, said this recently. He said, in the world of social media outrage, there is no place or pathway for forgiveness, and therefore no possibility of reconciliation. In the New York Times, Elizabeth Brunig says something similar. She says there's just something unsustainable about an environment that demands constant atonement but actively disdains the very idea of forgiveness. She says people suddenly seem offended by the very idea of forgiveness itself. They seem to find it immoral. And she said, I think that's very disturbing. It's outrage over outrage over outrage with no way out, no forgiveness. Forgiveness, according to the biblical scholar David Reimer, is a refusal to extract revenge. It's an astonishing concept, isn't it? Declining to collect the debt when it falls due. Refusing to be outraged. Declining to get even. Jesus says, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. Which is what ultimately Good Friday is all about. A price paid by him on our behalf. Because God is not like 21st century cancel culture. Elizabeth Brunig is right. An environment that requires constant atonement, constantly making right, where you're forever paying for your mistakes with no way out, it's crushing, unsustainable. Whereas Good Friday offers one atonement once and for all. That if we can just get our heads around it and grab hold of it, opens up the way to real peace, reconciliation, not just with God, but one another. Notice it's only one of the criminals beside him who's blaspheming him. The other one sees things differently. Who knows how, through the mist of sweat and blood clouding his eyes, struggling for every breath. Somehow sees clearly, rebukes his criminal colleague. The other one rebuked him, saying, don't you fear God, since you're under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we're receiving the due reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong. More than that, he can somehow see in the midst of all the mocking, in the midst of the dripping sarcasm, midst of the jokes and jibes, he can somehow see there really is a kingdom taking shape. Jesus really is a king. And so he says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. To which Jesus replies famously in verse 43, truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. Not because he is a good thief, in spite of what's engraved on our Station of the Cross inscription out the front of the church. Not because he's a more religious thief. Not because he is the gone to church every Sunday thief, but because he has asked for and found that forgiveness at the expense of Jesus and recognised Jesus as the King that he is. When others can only mock and live in a mocker's world, without mercy, without forgiveness, without any way to atone, including comedians with off-colour jokes, including the 3rd century crew mocking Alexamenos, including maybe, if you are one who follows Jesus, the ribbing you got in your office yesterday, or from your brother, or your adult kids, or your neighbours. But this, my friends, is Good Friday, and this is why it's good. This is how we find forgiveness and how we learn to forgive.
You've been listening to Scotscast, the Bible teaching podcast of Scots Church Melbourne.